Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
ESPN 97.5. KFNC 97.9 HD2. Mont Belvieu, Houston. A Gal Media station.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I am Branham. It's Boston Rodriguez behind the glass, B-Rod. And it's a Monday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Been a while since we've had the band back together. We missed you on Friday. Brian did not work on Friday. I think he gave it a valiant effort, and then he was still sick after he tried to work a little bit. He's like, I'm not gonna make it.
He showed?
No. He just early in the morning in the prep process. I think he was trying to go through the early morning prep process, and then it was like, and then all of a sudden it was like 11:30. He's like, I'm not gonna make it. I was like, oh, okay. Well, I appreciate the effort. But he is well. He was back on the air Saturday, though. He was on the air Saturday.
Oh.
So there was that. We know where his importance is. You were out Friday. So we haven't had... He was out Thursday. So we haven't been together since Wednesday?
Yeah.
Full band Wednesday?
Full band, yep.
That's okay. We got the talented B-Rod, Boston Rodriguez. Although they've made his camera a little bit smaller on the Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. ESPN Houston on YouTube. ESPN975 on Twitter. Astros... The weekend started off great. Yusei Kikuchi doing things that have only been done like once or twice before in Astros history. Didn't get off to a great start, but finished very strong. You win the series. You're like, vibes are great. And then the Astros offense went silent, scoring one run in the last two games. Good, bad, ugly, as we always do Monday. The Astros dictate what we begin with. So we start with the bad and the ugly. Blankers, take it away.
The bad and the ugly is I went yesterday.
Oh, did you really?
And I took Taylor for her first ever Astros game.
Oh, man.
That's a tough one when they only can muster up three hits.
That's unlucky.
And it's a 1-0 game. That was really bad for me because then there was a lot more trips around the stadium because it was boring. For me, the bad right off the top was the fact that Dubon was 0 for the weekend. Altuve was 1 for the weekend. Bregman and Pena 2 for the weekend. Once it went south, and it went south where you only got 8 hits over two games, the last two games of the series, the offense was dreadful, and those guys that you're really relying on heavily did not step up at all.
Yeah, that was the offense has been awful. Hey, look, banging the table for a little bit of help at the deadline, and we'll get into this in greater detail a little bit later, but it just blows me away that the Astros were so desperate for starting pitching help, which I understand. I understand, we need a sixth starter for when Verlander comes back. We need a fifth starter until Verlander comes back. The insurance, if they don't make it back. I get all of that, but why didn't you have the same desperation for an offense that has been really bad in July whenever one of your best offensive players is also out? So, if you had the desperation for starting pitching, where is the desperation for the offense? Kyle Tucker is continuing to – nowhere close to being back, it seems. It seems like September 1st is actually more of a realistic return than we all thought. So that's going to be 3 months out. So we're trying to trade for starting pitching to cover up some injuries and lack of production and youth, but then you don't do that on the offensive side. There are parallels. The starting pitching, you were scared because of injuries and because of youth. Don't you have that on the offensive side too? Like you're playing a bunch of guys that are unproductive at positions that you're counting on to be offensive weapons or offense plus. And then you're also counting on youth now because you bring up Pedro Leon and like want him to be the answer. So like the same things you were concerned about with the starting rotation are things that also exist with the offense, but you completely ignored the offense when things could have been done, but you get held over the barrel for starting pitching. Like it does not add up. It does not correlate. There is not parallels there when it should be.
It's very, very weird and confusing to see their logical thinking in all of this. We all knew they needed starting pitching. That's a granted. That's a given. But at the same time, it's not out of the outlandish realm of possibilities to say, hey, by the way, we could use a bat too, because we know that John Singleton's probably going to come back to the mean. He's probably not going to, although he's been okay, but you still could have upgraded first base. We know the corner outfield has been a disappointment all year when Yordan's not in left field because Tucker's been missing. Chaz has been horrible. Dubon's been slumping. We could go on and on. Loperfido never ended up to really find the stroke that he had in AAA. So you knew that there were plenty of holes there where you could be, or even if you don't want to call them holes, there was players that could be upgraded. There's positions where you could do more. So you could have identified both. And if Dana was so confident that, hey, no matter what we gave up, we knew there was going to be a big price. We knew what we needed because we knew we had to make the playoffs. Well, now you got what you said you needed, and we're looking at this offense going, but you might not have enough to make the playoffs if it keeps going in this direction.
Yeah, and that's very much on the table. And if the Astros weren't in the AL West, it might have been sellers. Like, Tampa Bay has a better record than you do now because you lost 2 of 3 against Tampa Bay, and they were sellers, and they still might be a better baseball team than you. The bad for me starts with the anemic offense. I don't have many bads. Like, I don't know how you can get past the anemic offense. Like, that to me is the headliner at the very top of the list. The other one, I guess, is that you make official what was already unofficial, and the Lance McCullers is going to be out for the year. Like, the Joe Espada, you know, the time's running out. We just don't see it possible, even though Lance McCullers, not that long ago, was throwing bullpens on social media, which drives me crazy. He was selling high and then producing low. It's ridiculous. But Lance McCullers now officially has lost 2 years. 2 years where he didn't throw a pitch at the major league level. He had 8 starts 3 years ago. So he's had 8 starts in 3 years, none in the last 2 years. And then to add on top of that, Lance McCullers making just shy of $18 million. Rafael Montero, who accepted his assignment, making $11.5 million. Jose Abreu, who you outright released, making $19.5 million. You have 3 players, and that's even before you start to get down the line, like Javier in extension. Verlander hasn't pitched a whole lot. He's making a decent amount of money, even though you're only paying half of that contract. But just those 3 guys alone account for nearly $50 million. You're getting negative war for nearly $50 million.
Yeah, when you look at it, and again, you and I have gone back and forth on who's to blame for what and where, but the front office has been a disaster. And ever since James Click walked out of the building, no matter who you want to place the majority of the blame on or some of the blame on, all of them deserve blame because of the fact that you're sitting on that kind of a bad apple of 50 mil, but you're also sitting on it and realizing it's probably playing a role in how much they didn't want to do extra other than get a starting pitcher at the deadline, because they were watching going to the second tier of the tax. They were watching what the owner probably didn't want to do and probably had mandated it down the list because he already had done enough. But the guys that they thought that they were doing enough getting when they didn't have a legit general manager, and then what Dana's done since with all the guys breathing down his neck, has been a disaster. It's not worked out well. It's not been anything good. Yes, the draft looks like he's doing his job there. But overall, for a team that's this good, that's expected to be competing for a World Series, regardless of anything else, it's hard to do it when it seems like your hands are tied by a lot of bad moves starting from the top down that have negatively altered almost everything else that you do other than maybe draft players.
Yeah, like how much he's responsible for what has gone on since he was hired, who knows. But before he was hired was Jose Abreu, was Rafael Montero, Lance McCullers. Lance McCullers' contract when he signed was team-friendly. Mm-hmm. Whenever he signed it, based on how he was pitching, it was team-friendly. But that's what Dana Brown took over. He took over a couple of contracts that didn't sound very good, that weren't very good. He took over a minor league system that wasn't very good. I think that Dana's actually done a decent job. Now, I'm critical of how he handled the trade deadline from an offensive perspective, and I certainly was critical of the Yusei Kikuchi trade. I think he's done a good job of drafting, like you said. Look, he drafted Jake Bloss, and whether he should have traded to Jake Bloss or not, he's already contributing to the big league team in the form of Yusei Kikuchi. And that was a third-round draft pick. So, whether you like the trade or not, Dana Brown was able to use that third-round draft pick to help the big league team in a year. That's pretty impressive. He was also, I don't know how much he had to influence Jim Crane, but he was able to influence Jim Crane. Again, maybe it didn't take a whole lot. Maybe it took a ton. I have no idea. To cut ties with Jose Abreu and to DFA Rafael Montero. So I give him credit on that front. I think at times he gets a little bit, or the Astros front office, again, I don't know who's really handling the trade deadline or how much everybody's involved, but the Astros front office, I think a lot of times gets like top of the market hungry. Like they kind of see the star. Okay, we're going to go for that star. They don't deviate from the star, and then they get caught with their pants down when it comes to other things. I think their star was a starting pitcher. They realized they couldn't get like the Skubals or maybe even the Flaherty. So it's like, okay, well, Yusei Kikuchi's that guy. But in the meantime, all these other moves are being made that could have helped your team that you are not even involved with.
Yeah, and the thing is that sometimes the most subtle of moves turn out to be the most beneficial to your squad. Yes, we understand that Jim Crane has a propensity to go after the really sexy big name, big get, splashy moves. But a lot of times when you see some of the smaller moves that this franchise has done over the years, some of the names they've added kind of that all of a sudden under the radar, when you add them, you're like, who or what were they doing? And then all of a sudden they end up being big contributors. And you can look up and down the list from the bullpen help and what Click was able to do when he brought in the three relievers in 1 year. And a lot of those guys panned out to the fact that, you know, I look for, you know, the fact that when you look at what the White Sox did, they turned a guy like Fetty, who they just pulled out of playing not even Major League Baseball, into a guy that pitched well for them and then turned around and got something for him, to where that's what good organizations do. They're constantly scouring wherever and whoever to see how they can bring in guys that might have a positive effect. And you're looking at this going, well, I mean, we know what they did with Hader and we know how much they spent on him. But other than that, they really didn't do anything. You can sit there and say, look, before Dana was hired, you can throw Brantley in the mix too, simply because even though he did, at the end where people remember it a little bit, he was supposed to play the whole season and he didn't. And that maybe could have done some things for you as well. But the spent money, the thrown away money, the fact that you paid Brantley for a full season for essentially half a month in the playoffs and the other two guys. And now you look at everything that they've had to endure this year. And these are the kind of moves when we talk about, hey, it doesn't take much for you to make a bad signing or a couple of different bad moves, and suddenly you're handcuffed and it can derail all of the good that your team has been going on, whether it's be for a year or in this case, to kind of keep the trajectory going forward for the golden era that's been open. It's been disappointing and it's been frustrating because it doesn't really matter who gets the blame for all of them. It's all a collective unit that has been underachieving.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we just like to associate the blame so somebody can be responsible for it. But at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter who's making the decisions. It isn't the Astros as a whole. That was the only other bad I had, the anemic offense and then just the official, unofficial news, or turning the unofficial to official. What else did you have?
The other two for me were just on the same night. But when Ferguson and Scott just kind of on the Blanco start kind of imploded, and instead of, you know, a manageable deficit to kind of all of a sudden the bombs, you're giving up home runs and runs, and suddenly you're down 6-1 or 2 instead of, you know, a 1 or 2 run game.
Yeah, I was surprised to see them use Ferguson for multi-inning appearance. Mm-hmm. That's not what I thought he was going to be. And maybe that was just one game, so let's, hey, pump the brakes. But even they were even asked about it afterwards, and they say they kind of view him as a multi-inning guy. Looking at his numbers this year, I look at him as a one-inning guy, and it's whenever you have a left-handed pocket. And they might not all be left-handed, but maybe you have two of the three that are left-handed, and the righty doesn't dominate left-handed pitching. I don't agree with the idea that he's a multi-inning guy. I think he is a one-inning lefty pocket guy, and that's it. So I was curious to see that he was out there for a second inning, and I don't agree with Espada afterwards saying that they kind of view him as a multi-inning weapon.
Yeah, and I think that when they put him in the game, and I had heard one of Espada's interviews where he's like, we're going to try, you know, Kikuchi's going to pitch tonight. We're going to try and get Ferguson in as well. We want to get him going as quickly as we can. That's fine and dandy, but I think the whole time I was watching him, and then as he kind of imploded, I was thinking, well, you got to spend some more time with him and see if there's things that you can work on, or hopefully, you know, the law firm can get with him and they can kind of tinker with some things. Because right now, you know, to throw him out there and get, and like you said, I wonder if he sees himself as a multi-inning guy, or if that might have been even too much for him, but he's trying to do what he has to do for a new team, giving him a new lease on life.
Yeah.
But that was a disaster.
And if they use him as a mop-up guy, And I mean, the Astros didn't trade up much for him, but it's like, okay. He didn't really think you were trading for a mop-up guy at the deadline. All right, good, bad, ugly, 713-780-3776. We'll get to yours. Andre Johnson went into the Hall of Fame. Who are the next few Texans Hall of Famers? We'll also get Blanker's ideas or what he was satisfied and dissatisfied with from the Texans Hall of Fame game that ended prematurely. He's also all in on the Olympics. Why is he all in on the Olympics? And we'll get to the Mailbag Monday a little bit later on in the show, too. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. On Twitter at ESPN975. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. On Twitter, I'm at Jeremy Branham. The good. Don't ignore in defeat what you wouldn't in victory. Did I say that right?
Kinda.
It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word for my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, he does the NeoGraft procedure and PRP treatments, and they are game changers. And if you don't know what that is, but you're experiencing hair loss or thinning hair, and you don't think there's anything you can do about it, you don't want to try all the gimmicks and the 1-800 numbers and the things you see on TV, all you got to do is go to 975hair.com. When you go to 975hair.com, that is your way to have a direct connection with Doc Linville and his staff. Sign up for a free consultation. It's free. It normally costs $150 for people off the street. You get it at no charge. Go in and let them explain everything they can do to help you get your hair back and maintain the hair that you have. And then see if the procedure sounds like something you'd like to do, one or the other or both. I've done both. They are game changers because they literally get your hair back. And what I found out in my consultation is that you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how much hair you lose in other areas. So he takes some of that and he repurposes it, and that's the NeoGraft procedure. If you don't need the NeoGraft yet, you have follicles. They're just kind of thin and they're kind of frail. It's like fertilizing your lawn when he does the PRP treatment. It gets the hair to get the actual nutrients that the hair needs to kind of regrow itself, but thicker and stronger and longer. You see the and reap the benefits and see the results by thicker, stronger hair. Check him out today and tell him I sent you by, because I've done both and they are game changers and they have worked for me. You might be the next in line and it may be working for you too, because the great thing is 95 to 99% of the follicles that they move stay, grow with you for the long haul, never going anywhere because they're coming from a place where they don't go away and everybody's happy in the long run. They are phenomenal. Check them out today, 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Good, bad, ugly. 713-780-3776. Astros dropped 2 of 3 against the Tampa Bay Rays, who were sellers at the deadline. They'll begin a 3-city road trip tonight in Arlington to take on the Arlington Rangers. No lineup yet for the Astros. I was hoping we would see a roster move by the Astros. I was hoping they would just go ahead and release Aledmys Diaz and bring up Shea Whitcomb. I guess I'll put that out as bad.
Yeah, I would like to see that as well. I mean, especially if you're not going to use Diaz, at least give a guy that seems like he can catch up with a fastball that can do some things for you with a struggling offense. Put a guy in there and take your best shot with him. I wasn't disappointed though. Leon only got the one hit this weekend. I wasn't disappointed with his at-bats, and I think that maybe it's legit that they do see that he has more of an upside or more talent than Loperfido in a lot of ways. I'm curious to see how that develops.
Yeah. I don't know. Loperfido had better AAA numbers than Leon. He got to the bigs quicker than Leon. So is Leon a higher upside guy? I don't know. He's been a higher rated prospect, but a lot of things favor Loperfido as well. Whitcomb, of those three guys, Whitcomb has the highest AAA OPS than any of them. Whitcomb's OPS was higher than Leon's. His AAA OPS is higher than Loperfido's. Not that that's the end-all be-all, but it's usually a decent tell. Like, if you had three random guys and you're saying, okay, one of these guys is going to have the most success at the major league level, you're going to take the guy with the best OPS, the second best OPS, or the worst OPS? I'm probably going to take the guy with the best OPS. Now, you know, sometimes people are talented and, you know, they make the jump better, or they're capable of hitting big league pitching where a guy could be a a 4A player that hits AAA pitching can never hit big league pitching. Maybe that's Lo Perfido, quite honestly.
And the balance is really becoming the fact that you can try all the guys if you want to see if any or all of them or some of them or one of them steps up and does it. The problem is that unlike years past when you had a cushion in the division and you could do a lot of things to kind of be trial and error, you really don't have that liberty this year because every game matters because you know what kind of a fight you're in with the Mariners and the fact that the wild card seems to be pretty much out of your range right now with what you've been doing and not being able to be consistent offensively.
Yeah, it really is. But yeah, I thought we might see that move today. We haven't seen it. 0979, Joey was a trash emoji. That's what he says. You might be right, 0979. But he also did have a better OPS than Pedro Leon at AAA. Does that factor in? Maybe not. Does it factor? Maybe it does. And Leon's also trash, if you think Joey is trash. 8664, guys, why are some Astros fans acting brand new about this offense? Not only does this happen every season, including the championship years, but it happens with Tucker at full strength. They will continue to be streaky until they change their batting approach from aggressive to selective. This isn't necessarily about a need for roster upgrades. That was Ocho.
Shocker. Yeah. I mean, Ocho will be Ocho even on a Monday. But, I mean, look, the problem that you have is because this is such a tight race is that with every kind of misstep or any kind of losing of a series the way they did this weekend, everybody's going to be hypercritical. The microscopes are going to come out, and everybody's going to be hyper-negative. You know, if they win a couple of games, if they beat the Rangers and they start winning again, people may have a different perspective. It's just that the biggest concern that I have is the fact that the Mariners and what they did, and you can say, well, so-and-so, Turner might be a little bit, you know, past his prime, whatever. They made moves. They went out and did just what we were talking about that we wanted Dana to do. More than just a starting pitcher, look to acquire multiple guys that try and put kind of a Band-Aid on what has been killing you all year. You got one. They went out and got two bats. Suddenly their offense looks a lot better. They were putting crooked numbers on the Phillies this weekend, and they did what they needed to do.
Yeah, I think Turner is way over the hill. I think Turner easily helps this Astro team, though. So, like, both things are true, I think. Hey, guys, this is H-Town Gary. Love the show. Just a quick note, McCullers is making more money this year than the whole 26-man roster of the Marlins. That stinks. But it's all injury. Like, Lance McCullers, if he were completely healthy, like, I know that's a fairy tale, but if Lance McCullers were completely healthy, Lance McCullers' salary is really good if he were healthy. And when the Astros signed him, he was healthy-ish. So I don't think it's so much that it was a bad contract when they signed him. It's just that revisionist history, hindsight 2020, it looks terrible because he hasn't pitched in 2 years, and he's made 8 starts in 3 years. So the fact that he's had the injuries is what makes the contract bad, not that the figure is ridiculous.
No, you're right. But, you know, it was funny when we did the cash or trash. I was going to say that both Garcia and Lance were not going to pitch the rest of the season. Lance was the easy one because I think we had already written him off. Garcia was the guy you were hopeful, but now it looks like neither guy is going to factor in as well. So now that also factors into what Dana did or didn't do, because when we started the discussions, we were looking at possibilities, no matter how you get creative doing it, of getting two starting pitchers.
Well, I don't think you could have done that.
Well, Paxton was the guy you could have gone after and could have tried to make a trade like the Red Sox made to try and get a guy like that, where it cost you a low-level prospect or something.
If you include Verlander, though, Paxton's not one of the top six starters on the Astros.
No, but he gets
even with the injuries.
But he gets you by until you get back whoever you were going to get back, and then he's still a major league arm that's probably better than a lot of you guys in your bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like his stuff doesn't really play as a bullpen guy. You know, he's more of a. I think he's more of a starter, and he's really like a super back end of the rotation. It's why the Dodgers got rid of him. The Dodgers got rid of him for nothing. 6927, did Blankers just call the White Sox a good organization? I don't think you said that.
No, I just said that was a savvy move in bringing a guy like Fetty.
Yeah, that was a savvy move. Because they brought him over. He was pitching in Korea or Japan? One of the two.
I think it was Korea.
Korea League? I think it was. 0979, the Astros need to hire y'all to win the trophy emoji. And then he had a sarcastic emoji, I think. I think that the Astros would be in a great spot if they hired us to be the general
manager. We've talked about it multiple times. There's no question we could just step right in and do what we needed to do.
If Bagwell got out of my way, I have no doubt that I would have done a better job since they fired James Click. And I mean that sincerely. All right, Blankers, what was your good? What was your good over the weekend?
Well, the good was after two bad at-bats in the first two guys he faced, that Kikuchi settled in and pitched really well. And two of the three – actually, all three of the starting pitchers, you could say, pitched – well enough. Obviously, we're watching Blanco, and it wasn't what we've been used to seeing out of Blanco. But to get the kind of strikeouts that you saw, 11 from Kikuchi, 12 from Arrigetti, and the fact that they ate up enough innings to get you where you needed to go to get to the back of your bullpen, I would say Kikuchi and Arrigetti, and for the most part, Blanco, your starting pitchers did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah, I would actually put Blanco as the – I did have Blanco as the good. I had starting pitching because Blanco was really good, I thought, with the exception of one pitch and driving up his pitch count. But he strikes out 7 in 5 innings, gives up 2 runs. You probably take that every time from Ronel Blanco. You'd like an extra inning there. But I thought Blanco was really good. Spencer Arrigetti, I think, has kind of been lost under the radar a little bit. Arrigetti in his last 5 starts is a 3.41 ERA, by the way. Mm-hmm. And for all the people that like FIP, his FIP is pretty dang good, too. So perhaps Spencer Arrigetti's turning into like a real big league starter for you. Maybe he's turning into a middle of the rotation starter at some point. So the fact that Arrigetti's got a 3.41 ERA in his last 5 starts, really good. I thought Ronel Blanco pitched really well, with the exception of one pitch, which is good for the whole he's regressing back to the mean thing. I think he's been pretty good in his last 3 starts, better than his line scores, and I thought he was really good in his last start. And then Yusei Kikuchi, like, that was a really good first start. Silenced some of the critics of the trade. 11 punch outs over 5 2/3. Had the stretch where he was striking out everybody. Bounced back after giving up 2 runs in the first inning. And the home run, too, was like an 0-80 hit probability. Mm-hmm. That was out of 5 major league ballparks. It was a Crawford Bach special. So, yeah, he pitched really, really well. I will throw out the caveat, though, that this is a Tampa Bay Rays offense that is not very good. You saw how many times they struck out all week, all weekend, all series long. Kikuchi strikes out 11. Ronel Blanco strikes out 7. Arrigetti struck out, what was it, 12, 13, which 12. Was the most. It was 12, which was the most by an Astros starter all year. Mm-hmm. So, like, yes, it takes good pitching to strike out hitters. It also takes hitters that aren't great at contact to strike out that much. It's part of the equation. Pitching versus hitting. Both are variables into the equation. So the Rays offense is prone to strikeouts. Let's keep that in mind.
And to kind of couple on that, you also took 2 of the 3 best hitters in their lineup out at the trade deadline. You lost a Rosarena, you lost Paredes, and those were 2 guys that were going to put the bat on the baseball. Yes, a Rosarena could strike out a little bit. Paredes was leading the team in runs batted in and home runs. And so that lineup was very much weakened by what they did at the deadline, and we saw that.
Yeah, yeah, and the only one that they had was Yandy really left, and he got hurt because he tried to fill a hard rocket from Yordan Alvarez. 6-2-4-6 pitching was fine this weekend. It was fine with the exception of what Blanker said earlier, the bullpen pitching in the second game, the relief pitching in the second game, which those are also like your mop-up guys. Those are your low-leverage guys.
Well, Taylor Scott, not so much, but he's also been used a lot, too.
Yeah, he's not a low-leverage guy, but he's not one of your top three.
Right.
Like, they'll use Taylor Scott in some low-leverage situations. They'll use Taylor Scott down by 1 run. They won't use Abreu, Presley, and Hader down by 1 run. But, yeah, not low-leverage. I would say Ferguson's probably low-leverage. One other good that I had, I think it's good that Rafael Montero accepted his assignment. And I'm not saying that in the sense that we're ever going to see Rafael Montero back on this team, although I wouldn't rule it out. Because he does have a big league arm, and if he pitches well in AAA, they probably would want to bring him back because he is making a lot of money. But good on Rafael Montero. Look, not a good contract. He's pitched poorly. I'm glad that he's not on the 26-man roster. But Rafael Montero could have very easily taken his ball and all of his money and just said, see you later, goodbye. I think it's professional of him to be like, hey, I'm going to go try to work it out and see if I can work my way back up instead of just completely mailing it in. Because I would completely mail it in. I'll be honest. I would have been on my way to Belize. I would have been out of the country. So I do tip my cap to Rafael Montero for accepting the assignment.
I think from an Astros fans perspective, that's the one thing you've got to actually appreciate from both guys, from both Abreu and Montero, that a lot of guys and their agents and the fact that they would just tell you it's a business on both sides, say, you know what, I'm going to take my money, I'm going to go home. If I find another opportunity, I'm going to get paid to go take that opportunity too. And you know what? Oh, well. But these guys seem like they legitimately cared. They legitimately were, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but if they weren't embarrassed, they were obviously very displeased with how it worked out after what the team did for them. And then for the second time this season, you saw a guy accept a demotion and try and stay to try and at least have a chance to make good on the fact that the organization threw a ton of money at him.
Yeah. Now, I don't think any fan wants to see Rafael Montero back on the team, though.
I think the main thing is, you know, as Dana said, you want to see him work on some things and try and you know, adjust and change some things. But that takes time as well. I don't know what he's going to do, if it's going to be location alone or if it's going to be, you know, secondary pitches and trying to develop something or use it more frequently. But, yeah, again, because you're in a tight race, I don't see a situation where we're going, hey, I got an idea. Let's bring Montero back up because he can help our bullpen. He can help you give up a five spot when you don't need to.
Yeah, I tip my cap to him accepting the assignment. But if he were to, all of a sudden, if we see that the Astros recall Rafael Montero, fans would not be happy with that news, even if he dominates in AAA. He could go dominate in AAA, and even if he does that and were to be called up, fans would not be pleased with seeing that transaction on the wire. Hey, Rafael Montero recalled by the Astros. People would lose their minds. 713-780-ESPN. HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. What's your good? What's your bad? What's your ugly? And again, let's pump the brakes on this Kikuchi thing. I saw a headline today I'm going to tell you about when we come back. Like, hey, let's pump the brakes a little bit. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Minute on Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Look, basketball is right around the corner, by the way. A training camp's going to be opening up soon. You're going to see some college games opening soon. I saw a schedule release earlier today. So it's about to be basketball season. Plus, it's going on right now at the Olympics. Not so great for the three-on-three side. But if you're looking for a goal for you or your kids, it's got to be a goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Tempered glass backboard, breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware, and it's height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. Why do you want to lower it down? Because you're going to throw down some dunks. You're going to throw down some jams. It's good for that breakaway rim, too. It's a good thing you have that to keep you safe, as will the extended overhang. The extended overhang will keep you safe, too. Don't worry about rolling your ankle on that basketball stanchion that's real close on all the goals you get from the big box stores. Their new goal, by the way, 4. You can raise and lower the goals with a drill. It's their lightning adjust feature. Use a drill, and you can lower it to 5 feet, raise it to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. Easy to do, fun to do. Their accessories are fun, too. LED light kits for night play. It's hot in Houston. Spoiler alert. You might only want to shoot some hoops or play on your new goal at night when the sun goes down. You can do that with LED light kits. Backstop nets, because you're lazy and don't want to run after the basketball. I don't blame you. Get a backstop net so you don't have to. And you can order everything online, including professional installation. We just, you know, you're lazy. That's why you're getting the backstop nets, right? We also don't want to install the goal. We've established that you're lazy. Let the pros from Pro Dunk Hoops install the goal for you. Perfectly straight, perfect height. You don't do a thing. Let the pros at Pro Dunk do all of the work for you. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunk.com. That's ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. You want to send in your good, bad, and your ugly. 6-2-4-6, Tampa has solid pitching, but that was a horrible offensive homestand, especially Saturday and Sunday.
That was a pretty good way to wrap that one up. That's a good assessment.
It was yesterday's game, bases loaded, first inning, one out. The Astros are world-class at squandering early game opportunities.
Yeah,
world-class.
I heard people saying that you should have sent Altuve, and he would have been dead to rights. We were sitting right there, and he had to freeze on the liner. But unfortunately, you would expect that the next guy up, Singleton, struck out, where all you needed was a fly ball. At least you get a run, and that run would have been critical.
Yeah, it was not great. Not great there. Ocho, fair point about the Rays, poor bats, but credit to my guy, Mr. Spencer Zane Arrigetti, for consistently painting the corners with his breaking ball. He can be successful versus any team with that kind of command. That's usually what gets him in trouble when he doesn't pitch well, is the command. So if he's spotting, he's tough to hit. I agree with Ocho that he has good stuff. I disagree with Ocho that he has the best stuff on the team. Give me Fromber's stuff. Give me Hunter's stuff. I'll take Kikuchi's stuff over Arrigetti's. But I don't think Arrigetti's too far off. I do think Arrigetti has really good stuff. I think he has plus stuff, yes.
I think the big thing, too, the correlation would be if you can see the way that they've kind of worked with Arrigetti and now they're getting the best out of his stuff, that maybe there's hope that he can keep pitching that way no matter who the lineup is that he's facing. And then they can do some things to maybe – because to me it seemed like Kikuchi after the first two hitters, I think that they maybe he was because I when the spotter was talking about it, he was like, we've seen something with both pitchers, with him and Ferguson. We want to see if they're willing to, you know, go along with what we've said. It's going to be up to them to do what we're going to suggest. It seemed to me like Kikuchi started getting away from the fastball a little bit, kind of
worked. No doubt.
And it was massively effective. So maybe that's something that allows him to kind of save the rest of his season.
Now, it will be interesting to see how teams adjust, because he threw the changeup a ton, which was like, we looked at the baseball savant. It's like, hey, use the changeup more. What I also did not see coming that he did was he abandoned the curveball. He only threw two curveballs in the entire game, which usually is his second most thrown pitch. So he completely eliminated the curveball, sans two pitches, and then he had the uptick in the changeup. So is that something that continues? More than likely. But let's see how other teams adjust, and then let's also see a team that maybe does not strike out as much as the Tampa Bay Rays, who, again, strikes out a ton, and we saw that to be true based on the every single game of this series. Now, the other thing is, we all need to... I saw people after this game, oh, the Astros won this trade, can you believe this? The Astros, oh, let Dana Brown cook, et cetera, et cetera. Let this play out. Like, we didn't like the trade whenever it was made, but even us who didn't like the trade were saying, let's let this thing play out. We were making fun of people who drew conclusions to the trade already. You can't draw a winner or a loser when the day the trade is made, just like you can't draw a winner or a loser after one single start. Cron.com. Who not affiliated with Houston Chronicle. People don't like to. The people at the Houston Chronicle make it very well known that they are not affiliated with the Cron. They make that known a lot. They had a headline on the Cron page of their sports section, which is just digital. It's all online, that talked about Yusei Kikuchi. And the headline for Yusei Kikuchi, which, again, let's pump the brakes here a little bit when talking about the guy after making just one start for the Houston Astros, was: Yusei Kikuchi shows he's worth the cost in historic Astros debut. It's been one start. You're already telling us he's worth the cost? How in the world could you know that? He might eventually be worth the cost. If he pitches really well, Astros make the playoffs, they have a deep playoff run, Wagner, Loperfido, Blas, they all amount to nothing, then yes, he's worth the cost. But you can't say after one start in a few days after the trade that he's already worth the cost?
Whoever wrote that headline, I wonder what they were saying two batters in.
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of people that were ready to jump off a cliff.
Oh, I thought he was about to get shelled.
Trade's over. I was worried. The minute I saw the first two batters, I'm like, oh, God.
I was like, here we go.
And I'm sitting here going, do I even look at Twitter? Because I know that already it's just that people are just going to be stacking and racking all the negativity and talking about what a worthless bad trade it was. You can't, we discussed it last week, you can't judge it until you see the totality of how everybody plays out and how they all play. But at the same time, was it a good first step?
Yeah.
Sure.
So
that's great. But can he keep it up? Because we know that in this next stretch of games, he's not facing the Rays anymore. He's going to be facing really good competition. And like you said, when they get tape on him and they see that this is kind of the way he's been adjusting his sequencing, they will adjust too.
Yeah. Like, hey, hopefully this is how he pitches. I hope that I'm dead wrong, by the way. I hope that he pitches incredibly well, that instead of being the mid unit, he's similar to the big unit. I hesitate saying that. I hope the Astros win the World Series with him. And I'm actually rooting against the Astros prospects that they send in the trade, because I don't want them to lose good prospects. I want Dana Brown to put a check mark here, because if Dana Brown wins this trade, and because Jake Blas doesn't look good, Loperfido doesn't look good, Will Wagner doesn't look good, they don't amount to anything, what are we going to be saying about Dana Brown? We're going to be saying that guy can evaluate talent. So I don't want the three prospects sent to Toronto to be any good, because I want to be able to say about the Astros general manager, that guy's got the eyes. He can pass the eye test. He knows how to evaluate talent. So I'm actually rooting against the prospects that went out.
I couldn't agree more, because I think that the one thing when you look at is when we talk about, you know, if there's a logjam at a position, or we say that, you know, they got rid of so-and-so because there was no clear path to get to the major leagues. Maybe it just was the fact that between Jacob Melton and or Leon and other guys in the system, Dana felt that there was more potential for long-term success than it was with Joey Loperfido. The same thing with maybe Will Wagner was exactly what he had seen, but he thought Whitcomb was a better version of him. Or maybe DeCenzo coming up is going to be the kind of guy that they're really banking on to be better than him. So from the prospect's perspective, those two guys alone, you can say, okay, well, if there's someone better or multiple guys that could be the same or better in the system, you get that. And then from the Blas perspective, worst case scenario, he is who we saw when he got up to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. And then you just kind of tip your cap and go, well, then they got a starting pitcher for the rest of the season they sorely needed.
Yeah.
If he turns out better, then hey, at least Dana evaluated talent the right way by drafting him and using him to get the guy you needed as a rental.
That would be best case scenario. You win the trade, and we all feel great that Dana Brown's fantastic at evaluating talent. I've seen some people, well, I want it to be a win-win. No, I don't.
Nope.
I want it to be an Astro win and a Toronto loss. And I want that about every single trade the Astros make. 60-30, Pena's lost again. I'd be open to trading him next year. He gets hot, and then boom, months of swinging at three straight sliders in the dirt. He's been poor offensively, especially in the series. I think it's very important to realize who Jeremy Pena is. Jeremy Pena is an average-ish offensive player that's an above-average to good defensive player at a premium defensive position. The Astros are asking him to be a middle-of-the-order hitter when he is not that. He is a bottom-of-the-order hitter that plays a good shortstop, which is a premium defensive position, and he's doing it on a very cheap contract because he's still on his the years of service, the six years that young players get whenever they come up to the Astros. So I like Pena. I'm a Pena guy. I don't think he's a good offensive player. Right now he's not an average offensive player, but he shouldn't be. He shouldn't be asked to be that.
I think traditionally and over multiple decades, you've seen center field and shortstop are guys that defense is the premium. Whatever you get from offense is more icing on the cake. Now it's changing in the last several years where you see a lot more when A-Rod came up, or you see Jeter, or you see the guys now like O'Neill Cruz and Ellie Dela Cruz and Witt Jr. and guys that are going to be more offensive dominating shortstops. But what you get out of Jeremy Pena is more than good enough, because he does get hot from time to time. He's stepped up in big moments for you, but the defense is there and he's solid. And it's the same thing with center field with Jake, in the fact that Jake has been decent offensively, but he's good defensively enough that it really then comes down to the people you surround those two guys with. The rest of your lineup, your corner outfielders, can't be doing what your corner outfielders are doing right now. And your first baseman has to be kind of a plus-plus guy that's going to give you production, which you haven't gotten for the totality of the year. That hurts.
Keith from L.A., if y'all don't want Pena, trade them to the Dodgers. We have some prospects for y'all. We need a shortstop. Move Mookie back to second or the outfield. All right, Keith from L.A., that's your one text that you get this week. Andre Johnson, what'd you think of the Hall of Fame speech? And who are the next three Houston Texans Hall of Famers? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. They just show Will Levis on TV, so allow me a second to recover. Andre Johnson, what'd you think of his Hall of Fame speech?
I think if you want to look at the role model for how speeches should go for the Hall of Fame, I thought it was perfect. I think he didn't spend a ton of time listing every player he played with. He covered the totality of his career from high school through. I thought he did a hell of a job. I thought he hit all the main points, and I was moved by the way he did it.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. He crushed the over. What were we saying, 5.5 minutes?
No, I thought it'd be 12.
Oh, he did. He was way over.
Was he?
He was 15 minutes.
I really thought he'd be shorter than, I thought he'd be possibility of flirting with 10.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. Covered the fact, I grew up in Miami, thankful for the city and, where I grew up, and then his his mom sending him to Miami High School, and thanked his coaches that were there, and then talked about playing in Miami, and then eventually to the Texans, and how much appreciation he had for the fans, and gave the love to his family. I thought he hit it out of the park. I thought it was a phenomenal job by Andre Johnson. And the question now becomes, we already know who the next Texans Hall of Famer is going to be. It's J.J. Watt.
Mm-hmm.
Even if J.J. Watt comes back, he's still the next Texans Hall of Famer, I believe. So who are the next, who are the next three Texans Hall of Famers?
See, that's tough, man. I think that, do they have to play the majority of their career with the Texans?
Yeah, I don't think the Hall of Fame, the NFL Hall of Fame does the bust where they go in with a Texans helmet. They don't do that. But if we were making the determination that they were going to have a team helmet on their bust, it would be a Texan.
Okay. I honestly think it's going to be Tunsil and Tunsil because of the if for the entirety of his career,
no doubt
he
no
does
doubt.
It at that level. I think that whether you hear about him or not,
good call.
I think Tunsil will be in the mix to be that the next guy up, and then after that, it's going to be really interesting to find out if you have to wait all the way to see if CJ's career turns into it or Stingley or one of the young guys that you have, because I really couldn't pinpoint. I would say CJ. If I had to say anybody right now, I would say Tunsil and then CJ.
See, Tunsil might change my answer, actually. That was a really good one that I hadn't thought about. Maybe it's because of my anti-Tunsil bias. Just kidding. I like
the beef, your Twitter beef.
I actually like Tunsil. I didn't. That didn't affect me at all. The next one, though, to me is DeAndre Hopkins. I think Hopkins would be in before Tunsil, I think, because Hopkins is a little bit older. Mm-hmm. I think Hopkins is closer to retirement than Tunsil. And those are both players that didn't play all of their career with the Texans, but I think it would be their team that they would have on their bust.
Majority of their career.
I wouldn't even say majority of their career. I would say a majority of their production. Like DeAndre Hopkins, true, majority, right? It probably will be. I don't know like how much longer Hopkins is going to play. I think there's a chance that DeAndre Hopkins plays more years away from Houston than he plays in Houston.
But the totality of for one team, like he'll have played more years for the Texans than because he played Arizona, then Tennessee. So he's not going to play the same amount of years that he would for the Texans, I don't think.
Probably not. But even if he did, I care more about the totality of production than the totality of years.
And the good years, too.
Like, if Hopkins stayed in Arizona for the remainder of his career and played two more years in Arizona than in Houston, I still would have Houston as his bust because of totality of his production and the most of his production came whenever he would have been with the Texans. Like, Laremy Tunsil could end up being like that, too. Or Laremy Tunsil plays more years away from Houston than in Houston. I doubt it. I think there's a better chance of Hopkins does that than Tunsil. But again, most of his production would come whenever he is a Houston Texan. So Hopkins, for me, would be second. Mm-hmm. I think Laremy Tunsil is a Hall of Famer, actually. So does Laremy Tunsil, I don't know if he's a first ballot guy, but does he eventually get in before one of these youngsters do? I would go yes. That actually changes my answer. Because I had Watt, Hopkins, Stroud. I had Stroud as the next guy. But I do think that Tunsil eventually gets in. So I'm going to steal your answer, add it to my answer, and go, what? Then I'm going to go Hopkins. Then I'm going to go with Laremy Tunsil. Do you think Dwayne Brown's a Hall of Famer?
I don't.
I don't either.
I don't. I know that he was a big piece of the puzzle here. I know it didn't end well, but I know that, you know, he was always one of those foundational guys that everybody looked at when they were looking at the best players on this team for a while. But being the best player on this team doesn't mean that you were worthy of being one of the best players in the history of the game in the Hall of Fame. And I don't think he carries the same kind of weight. I think I'm going to do what you did, though, too. I think that on the reverse side, I'm going to leave Tunsil in, and I think there's more than a legit chance that D-Hop gets in. So I would say then CJ's down the road, and then it would be D-Hop and then Tunsil.
Brian Cushing, question mark. I don't think Cushing's anywhere close to being a Hall of Famer. This is a good one. This is a good one, but I would argue that the majority of his production did not happen in Houston.
I know what you're going to say.
Who?
Shane Leckler.
Yeah.
He's going to get in, I think.
I mean, he's arguably the greatest punter of all time since like Ray Gay or whatever.
Ray Guy.
He wasn't gay. He was a guy. Yeah. He's going to get in, but I would argue that I don't even think it's arguable. Like, he didn't become a Texan until he was 37. Right. He spent the first 12, 13 years of his career with the Raiders. All of his Pro Bowls and all of his AP first and second teams came with the Raiders. So Leckler will get in, but I would argue that Leckler is not a Texans bus guy. Yes, I don't know they don't do that in the Hall of Fame, but if we're trying to establish one team for that player, it'd be the Raiders, not the Texans.
No, totally agree. And he will get in. And it's just now that they're paying more attention than they've ever in the past. They just didn't want to consider punters. Ray Guy was the greatest punter in the history of the game, hands down. Now they're going to consider every aspect of a roster and what they mean. And you're seeing, you know, Devin Hester as a kick returner getting in. You're seeing things like that happen where Leckler's going to get in.
Well, if we're counting specialists,
I know where
I would like John McClain to lobby for John Weeks. John Weeks, the greatest deep snapper in the history of the NFL. The greatest deep snapper that the Texans have ever had. I'm pretty sure he was here with the expansion Texans. I think he's the only deep snapper the Houston Texans have ever had. Tongue in cheek. Let's throw John Weeks out there. 5798, did y'all just say J.J. Watt for the next Texan in the Hall of Fame? To me, it's
a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer. Fairbairn? I think Fairbairn's a long shot.
I don't think he's going to get in. Because you think about all the great kickers in the league. It's hard for them to get a kicker to get in the Hall of Fame.
I also think for a kicker to be in the Hall of Fame, you have to have postseason glory. Like, you can have all the stats, but I also think you need a game-winning field goal in the Super Bowl or great postseason success. Like, Justin Tucker has a Super Bowl.
He is a lock.
He's won a Super Bowl, too, right? He was on the
with Baltimore.
Flacco team.
Yes.
Whenever they won that Super Bowl in the Superdome. So, I think Tucker's the greatest of all time. So, mm-hmm. for you to not be the greatest kicker of all time and not, like, top three, top five, even top ten, you have to have some postseason heroics, like a Vinatieri. And even Vinatieri's an all-time great without the postseason heroics.
Yep. No, you have to be on a different level, like, to your point, notoriety wise, big kick wise, and then the consistency of everybody while you're still playing is pointing the finger and making extra attention gets on, like, a Justin Tucker going, dude does not miss, dude is, and they start calling him the GOAT while he's still playing. Otherwise, there's a whole upper echelon level of kicker that does a great job, does their job really well, but at the end of the day, the name doesn't stand out enough for you to say he's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. What about somebody texted Matt Schaub?
Nah, come on.
Yeah, he's not close to a Hall of Famer. He's not even close. Here's an interesting one. Gary Kubiak.
I don't think so. I don't think that from, what, a contributor? I mean, you could say a head coach. Yeah, as a head coach, he won two?
He won one.
He won one. That's not enough.
He might have won one as a coordinator, but he's only had one as the head coach whenever he was in Denver.
That's right. It was I just don't think so.
Yeah, I'm out on Kubiak as well. 82 lifetime wins, like, that's not great. He's only had in his career three. He's only had five winning seasons, and two of those winning seasons were 9-7. Like, 82 wins, one Super Bowl is not going to get you in.
No. I mean, I don't even know if they do the contributor thing like that. But
he's not even a contributor.
I'm going to say, but from a head coaching perspective alone, that's not enough to boost your stock to say, well, there's a guy that's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. A
couple people said Arian Foster. I don't think Foster's longevity was enough. At his best, he was really, really good, but he had like 2 or 3 years of that.
You talk about guys with shortened careers that still got in, like Terrell Davis, like, if you want to go back a ways to some of the guys that, whether it's Barry Sanders, that was a no-brainer, and he cut his career short by just calling it quits, or Gale Sayers because of an injury, Jim Brown. You have to be really, really, really dominant with a shorter career. Terrell Davis had some big years for Denver, and he had more good years than Arian did.
Yeah, Arian, like, Hall of really good. Arian's not a Hall of Famer. Just doesn't have the duration, just doesn't have the longevity. John Weeks, they're not putting a deep snapper in, especially a deep snapper from the Texans. Although I'd love to have John Weeks in the Hall of Fame. He definitely should be in the Ring of Honor.
Like, Jonathan Joseph had a really good professional career, but Jonathan Joseph isn't a Hall of Famer.
No,
and he had good years in Cincy. He had good years here. But, and you know, he got recognized, but he didn't do enough.
If you eliminate the non-active players, who from the active players are you most confident will be a Hall of Famer first?
I think CJ's the first one.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else has the Hall of Fame career. What about Danielle Hunter? But that wouldn't be mostly as a Texan.
Stingley?
That wouldn't be mostly.
Or Will Anderson?
Stingley might have a Hall of Fame career. Anderson might have a Hall of Fame career, but I don't think they get in before Stroud.
Oh, no.
Like, because you would require one, they would have to retire earlier, which that's possible. Defensive ends play a long time. Corners retire earlier. Quarterbacks can play into their 40s if they're still really, really good. But are those guys first balloters? Whereas the quarterback has the advantage of being a quarterback.
They're already playing catch up based on the fact that even though Will Anderson was Defensive Rookie of the Year, the fact is, we go back to the notoriety card, there's no one that gets more credit and notoriety than the quarterback. And CJ had, as everybody nationally and locally will remind you, the greatest, if not one of the greatest rookie seasons of all time at quarterback. They're all playing catch up, trying to catch up for one of the greatest seasons in quarterback history. CJ will be the next one.
Yeah, there's no lock,
right? No, it's not a lock. But I'm saying if those are the three into consideration, he's got a massive head start.
I think we covered it up. I think we covered all of them. I think Hopkins, Tunsil from Houston only. Like, if Houston's the majority of their production, so that would eliminate Lechler, and then that gets you to the active roster. I don't think we missed anybody. I think Hopkins, so Tunsil, Watt. Does Brown have a chance? I guess Brown has a chance. I don't see it happening, though.
See, I think Trent Williams was more dominant, and Trent Williams playing the same position. I think Trent Williams is a guy
But he's later. He's still playing. I mean, Dwayne Brown retired, 2 years ago?
Last year with the Jets.
But he's still going to be on the ballot way before Williams would be.
Yeah, I just don't think he gets in.
I don't either. All right, what was Blanker's? He wasn't in on Friday, so he didn't get a chance for him to react to the Texans Hall of Fame game where they had the over. They didn't cover,
I
but they
that.
Were both
I was
voided.
Thinking about that.
They were both voided though because of the weather. Mm-hmm. What was he satisfied and dissatisfied with in that Texans Hall of Fame game? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please
stand by. Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats. But sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than two decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.